The Troy Savings Bank Music Hall and WAMC will be presenting An Evening with Ira Glass tomorrow night at 8 p.m. His event is entitled Reinventing Radio and will explore the creation of his public radio hit, This American Life. He will talk about TAL and how it's put together, what makes a compelling story, where they find the amazing stories for their show, how he and his staff try to push broadcast journalism to do things that it usually doesn't do. Ira Glass is the host and producer of This American Life. It's the toast of broadcasting. The show has won the Peabody, the DuPont Columbia, the Murrow, and the Overseas Press Club, to name a few awards. Ira was named best radio host in the country by Time Magazine and received the highest individual honor in public broadcasting, the Edward R. Murrow Award. The American Journalism Review declared that the show is at, quote, the vanguard of a journalistic revolution. It's a great pleasure to welcome Ira Glass back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's very nice to have you here. Where do you think we are in this journalistic revolution?
Well, we're marching on Albany soon.
one town at a time. Is that the way?
Rensselaer to come. Yeah. Where are we? I mean, I think honestly, the kind of reporting that we do on our show on the radio, where there's stories with characters and scenes and more emotion and more plot, like stories that are organized around plot. You know, I feel like people were doing those kinds of stories on the radio before I started This American Life, and doing those kinds of stories in print too. Like a lot of the new journalism of the 60s and 70s was built around stories like that. But I think that what's happened is that This American Life has become a very visible example of it. And because we were out there showing, like, oh, you could just do this every week, a whole show of it, other shows have now sprung up that do what we do and then take it further in different directions. So you have Radiolab, you have Snap Judgment. The Moth podcast, in a certain way, is kind of a variation on the theme,
right?
And Moth podcast and radio show, and then I think on the daily news shows, I think you hear people who have just heard us do a lot of these things, and some of them, you know, are people who we collaborate all the time with, like the economics reporters from Planet Money. So I think in public radio, like there's kind of a growing thing happening where people hear the same things in this kind of story that I heard when I was, you know, 19 and 20 and starting to make radio stories and decided to make this kind of story. And I mean, I wish we could claim more credit for it, truthfully. I think simply through existing, we, you know, like other people have had the same feeling of like, oh, that's kind of a fun story to do. Let's do that.
470 plus shows in. At what point did you sort of get it as to what was working, in the sense that the theme, the stories? I assume this comes through a journey for a while of figuring out and finding your sea legs.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, when you start any show, it really is a kind of act of faith with the future that you'll figure out what the thing is supposed to be. And if you listen to the early shows, which are all online, you know, you can listen for free.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hear it's like they're the sort of audio equivalent of the early episodes of The Simpsons, where the characters are recognizably the same characters, but they're drawn wrong and the colors are off and they don't look exactly like themselves. And in the early episodes of the show, truthfully, it wasn't clear to us as a staff or me as the producer, like how much of the show should be old-fashioned kind of narrative stories. Like in the early shows, we try a lot of different things and we have performance artists on and you know, we have things, honestly, that we would never do today. And I remember having the feeling of like, I don't even know what goes in this show. Like it feels like anything could go in. And occasionally we'll just throw something in just because we like it. But over the years, I and my collaborators in making the show, like we really came to decide that what we like are like stories in the old-fashioned kind of story sense. We felt like it both played to our strengths and it played to kind of a market niche that wasn't being served in public radio. And there's something really gripping about a great story on the radio.
If you find a story, do you often try to find a theme to accompany it, or does it always start with that theme?
No, usually, the way that it works is that if we stumble across a story that's just, you know, too good not to put on the radio, like I sat on a train next to a woman who had told me this story on the train of when she was a kid and got bit by a shark and what happened afterwards. And in a way, what happened with her parents afterwards, where nobody believed how much how much pain she was in from her injury was more harrowing than the shark bite. And I knew, like, oh, that's a really good story for the radio. Even though she didn't want to come on the radio and tell it, I had to kind of, like, really wait for her to come around to the idea of telling it on the radio. And at that point, we didn't have a theme for it. And so often we'll stumble as a staff on some story, and then we just invent a theme that could go with it. And then we look for other stories that could fill out the show. So usually it's a process that takes 3 or 4 months, and we'll go through 15 or 20 story ideas and go into production on 7 or 8 stories, meaning, you know, people get interviewed, things get written, reporters go out in the field, and then we'll kill everything but the 3 or 4 that end up on the air.
You mentioned a few minutes ago about being that 19-year-old kid and wanting to tell these stories on the radio. What were you listening to as a kid growing up on the radio?
Well, on the radio, like, there wasn't much that was very good. I mean, I grew up in suburban Baltimore. I'm old enough so that public radio began as a national system when I was like 10 or 11 years old. So I didn't grow up listening to public radio at all. I got my first job, my internship at NPR, never having heard of it or heard it on the air. And at the time in 1978, like, no one had heard it on the air. Like, it was very, very new. Like, they had one afternoon news show and a couple of music shows, and audience was tiny. And so the radio that I listened to was the regular pop radio. And when I was in high school, there was a kind of an early version of a shock jock, not quite shocking enough to be a real shock jock, but in suburban Baltimore, in Baltimore, he was. His on the air name was Johnny Walker. And he was a very funny local DJ who, if you were a teenage boy in the suburbs, like, all of us listened to him and all of us would quote his jokes to each other. And it was sort of faux raunchy, which wasn't really raunchy at all in retrospect. And he did the Johnny Walker Little News of the Morning, and he did this and that. Like, he did all kinds of stuff. And he it was a high production show. He had all of his, like, an audio audience on, and people clapping and all kinds of music cues and this and that, all on sound carts, this old technology that you'd use. These things are literally physical carts that you would throw into a like an 8-track machine, basically. And after my junior year of high school, I wrote to him and said, you know, I'm like a super fan. Or after my senior year of high school, I wrote to him and said, like, I'm a super fan. Like, and I sent him jokes. I sent him a few pages of jokes. And he paid me for the summer $15 a week to write jokes for him. And then I would go into WFBR, the AM station, early mornings during that summer and watch him do his show sometimes, which was really amazing. And what I do now is so dramatically different. I feel like the only thing he and I have in common is kind of the will to entertain. But he was a real sweetheart. And I had never, like, it was such a different kind of experience of radio. I mean, it was morning drive time radio, and he was a really big deal in Baltimore. Like, when he got married, it was a ceremony held, like, outdoors in the middle of, like, this big civic plaza, and the mayor of Baltimore officiated. I mean, he was a really, really big deal, Johnny Walker. And so even just to get to meet him was crazy. Like, I had never met anybody that famous as, like, a local person on the radio. And I remember when I called him, or when I wrote to him, he called me on the phone, which was crazy, to have somebody from the radio talking to me on the phone. And he sounded just like he sounded on the radio. And he said, well, look, I'd like to meet you. Like, I'm going to send my man to come and pick you up. And Johnny Walker had a limo driver and a limo that was, and I just said, this is so, like, he is living such a, like, a lush life, you know what I mean? And he had a limo. It was only much later that I realized, like, oh, he had to have a driver because he had had so many, like, DUIs, I think, in his early life, like, that I don't think he was licensed to drive anymore. And I remember sitting in the back of this, like, limousine, like driving through, you know, Baltimore to this neighborhood I'd never been in, where the houses were bigger and nicer than where I grew up by far. And just try, like, wow, this whole radio life is amazing. And I mean, I think it was another, like, 25 years before I drove in a limo again for my job.
Yeah, that's, you know, not, I mean? a common occurrence.
It didn't. Yeah, no. There was
public,
like,
or commercial radio.
Exactly. There was a long stretch between limo rides.
You know, you have been very, I think, have been wonderful in acknowledging what Howard Stern has meant to you
in your career and in broadcasting as in a total. I think it's interesting because when I mention it on the air, I get letters. And I'm sure you do too. It's something to be said for someone like a Howard Stern, and I would argue there is only one, but of someone like that who can go on the air and do what he does and be the type of interviewer that he is, and quite frankly, get away with it for as long as he's gotten away with it.
Yeah, I mean, Howard. Like, I think that Howard is a victim of his own branding. When it comes to a lot of serious-minded people. That is, in order to get the largest possible audience, he consciously branded himself as this, you know, shocking figure, and girls are taking off their clothes in his studio and this and that. But if you actually listen to the show, like, there is a segment like that, maybe even, I don't know if it's every day still, but you know what I mean? There'll be some moment where some stripper will take off her clothes, right. And that's like, you know, 15, 20 minutes of the show. But those of us who are Stern fans, we aren't listening for that. Like, if anything, like, that's kind of like, all right, another girl takes off her clothes, which is a crazy thing to say and kind of a failure of technique, actually, if a girl is taking off her clothes and your audience is going, again. But he's an amazing interviewer. And beyond that, like, an amazing interviewer, like gets things out of people you can't quite believe you're hearing, and super frank. And he does it through some of the most old-fashioned techniques where he is just very, very real with people about who he is. And it's hard not to respond to that without being real about who you are. And he gets super famous people to say really frank stuff. I mean, there's a lot of famous people who I'm not so interested in hearing from, but they are interesting on his show in a way that they're not interesting anywhere else. And anywhere else, you kind of get the canned version of them. And with Howard, you feel like you really get to know them in a very real way. And then beyond that, just as kind of a radio person, the construction of that show, the structure of that show is just beautiful. And I had a friend in upstate New York who was a fan, and he was a little older than me, and he still is a little older than me. And he, the way that he described it is that he said that it reminded him of the old Jack Benny show, where you have he says it's very old school radio, where you have a set of characters, and each character kind of has their thing. And then when each one comes on at each episode of the show, you kind of know, like, oh, that's their thing. And you love them for their thing. And it's fun to hear them interact. And what they do over the course of the show is they just invent one situation after another to put this cast of characters that we know. And if we're longtime listeners, really, like, we have strong opinions. So there's the ones that we love. Like, really, there's certain people in that show that I actually love. And ones who you just who annoy you, and ones who you're just like, eh. And to hear them kind of go at each other. And when they stumble on a really great topic or a really great, you know, thing to try, and everybody's personality comes out, like, it's just a huge pleasure. I don't know. It's a different show than the stereotype that Howard created in order to sell it.
Of course, the cliche is the theater of the mind. But when you talk about Howard Stern, even going back to your early days with Johnny Walker, and what you do of being able to capture an audience that is in a car or at home or wherever they may be to listen and to become fully involved in what it is that you're doing and the stories that you're telling.
Yeah, and I think the key to that is the realness of his show and the realness of, you know, anybody good who's on the radio, that you feel like this is a real person talking, and there's just an intimacy to that.
What has surprised you in doing your show for as long as you've been doing it that people respond to? Because as you were just talking about Stern, you use the word, the simplicity of it in this old school, which really you in your show go back to as well. You said at the very beginning, you know, you're sort of reinventing it, but it's these very basic tools of entertaining an audience.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that our show, we are relying on the oldest forms of human narrative. Like, I feel like if you can't succeed with this stuff, like with the forms that we're doing, then you just have no will to you know, make people interested. You know what I mean? Like we're, you know, like I feel like we do very traditional kinds of say something, get something really surprising that you know, ear catching at the beginning, and then just kind of, you know, let the thing unfold, let the plot thicken, kind of in a very traditional way. So I feel like, you know, for us, that's what we're trying to do. I mean, what's been surprising to me in recent years is how the audience has changed from an audience that I think was mostly reacting the way that I react to the stories. That is, you know, I'm putting on stories that are personally interesting to me and the staff. You know, like that's the stuff we choose. Like if we feel like our taste is pretty normal, we're pretty normal. Like if we find this completely captivating, other people will too. And in the early years of the show, I felt like the audience was relating to the stories in exactly the same way we did. And now I think that's true for probably 70% of the audience. And then there's a 30% that comes to everything on the radio and everything in public discourse with such, I mean, maybe it's 30, but maybe it's 20, that they come to it with such a political agenda or political chip on their shoulder that the kind of venom and vehemence that fills other kinds of public reactions to stuff, I feel like we get that now too. You know, like we'll do a story on something political or even something that's not political, and people respond to it in a way that has a kind of like a bitter political agenda to it. And that's a little, and that's definitely a change. And it's definitely been a surprise to see how thorough that change is in America. That even like, you know, that a show like ours, which is kind of like a weekend show, not a news show, right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like on a public radio station, would be getting the kind of vitriol we get.
You know, I see it too in our show, and I think that it's interesting because it's well, first of all, it's sad, but I'm curious as to in your discussions with your staff on what you do, does that ever color what you do in the sense of does it play is it an influence in what you do? Are you
not in a big way, but occasionally there'll be something where we'll be like, well, let's not use this word.
you know what I mean?
I mean, this is just going to make some people mad and we want to keep them on our side here. So let's just like, we're not going to use this word. Let's use this word. Like there's a little bit of that. I wish I could think of a specific example for you. But no, like generally it's hard enough for us to find stories that are compelling enough for our format that it hasn't influenced our story selection, I think, at all. Do you know what I mean? Like for us to find a story where there's a character and something big happens to them and they change enough and they're articulate enough about it to say it on the radio and it's dramatic enough and surprising enough to be worth putting on the radio. Like that's a really hard set of hurdles for any incident to jump over. And so by the time you've jumped over those, we don't apply any kind of like political correctness filter to it.
Do you... You still feel comfortable in what you do in the sense of in finding those stories, there isn't a kind of looking over your shoulder and saying, yikes, we're kind of running out of the things that I like to do.
No, not at all. If anything, the thing that's been surprising is as the years have gone on, I feel like we have consistently found new things to invent and new things to try. In a way that I don't think I anticipated when we started. Like there was a point around 4 or 5 years in when we actively talked a lot as a staff about like, okay, well, have we now used up every story? Like, because we would do a lot of stories on kids and their parents and, you know, the kids' disappointment with the parents / the parents' disappointment with the kids, you know, like, you know, and just like, they're just like a lot of like personal kinds of stories. And then at some point we expanded out from applying the tools of journalism to very personal stories to everything else. Like we'll take on things that are in the news and we'll take on things that are in politics and look, and, you know, we'll go to Iraq. We'll do a historic story. You know, we'll just do anything. But do it in our style where there's characters and scenes and certain kinds of moments in there. And honestly, like there's enough new stuff to do that it always feels like there's stuff to do that we haven't done before.
You're coming to the Troy Savings Bank Music Hall tomorrow night. The name of the evening is Reinventing Radio, an evening with Ira Glass, and it's pretty much you coming out with an iPad and talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
an hour and a half, 2 hours, and telling people about what it is you do.
The iPad is to play clips. I'm not up there like, you know, just playing Angry Birds or something while I talk.
That'd be a good gig though. Yeah,
that would be a really good. Hold on for a second. Hold on. Okay. All right. No, sorry. Where was I? Yeah. No, that would be awful. Yeah, no, so I come out and I have clips and music and the sound. And basically, as I describe what we're trying to do on the radio show, I can recreate the sound of the show around me and tell stories from the show in bits and pieces. And partly, the show is everything that you sort of described at the top of the segment. But really, its crypto agendas is that it's just an excuse to play a lot of really funny and memorable moments and talk about them.
Well, we look forward to having you in town. I'll be introducing you on Saturday night. Is there anything that you hate about that or that I should be aware of? Anything I should or shouldn't do?
I don't know. Don't say he could have lost a little weight for this gig.
I certainly will not say that.
I don't know. I think if you remind people when they can hear the radio show, that would be lovely.
Well, I'll do that right now, actually. This American Life airs on Fridays at 8, Saturdays at 4, right here on WAMC. I'll remind folks of that again tomorrow night. Reinventing Radio, an evening with Ira Glass, takes place tomorrow night at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall in Troy, New York at 8 o'clock. You can go to troymusichall.org for more information. Ira Glass, it's always a pleasure and an honor to speak with you. I thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow night.
I look forward to seeing you too. See you tomorrow night.
A great pleasure. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.